Hey there, you're listening to A Couple of Dusty Muffins. Hi, I'm Penny Legate.
I'm Julie Blacklow.
And we are here to entertain, educate, and uplift, or something like that, right?
Well, engage.
Engage. Oh, that's the word I forgot.
Engage.
We want to
get engaged. Have a good time with us.
Today we're talking celebrities we've known and loved. So if you don't know who we are, just briefly, we're very fabulous ex-television personalities. We have had so many experiences with, you know, the famous, the rich, the not so famous.
I figured once in my 40-year career in television news that I've done about 30,000 interviews, the good, the bad, and the ugly. But today we're talking about the good and the funny, the celebrities that we've met along the way.
So how do you want to start? Should we talk about the most famous person we ever met? Or what do you want to do?
It would be hard to, let's start with the most famous.
Okay.
Except they're all going to be well known.
Right. So who do you think is the most famous person you ever met?
Well, it's got to be a tie between Paul McCartney and JFK Jr.
Seriously? You met JFK Jr.?
I did. He was on a tour promoting his new magazine, George.
Right.
And so he was coming to Seattle. He'd been in 25 other cities. And I was working that day for Entertainment Tonight. I was a freelance producer for them for many, many years. And those were always the fun jobs for me because I got to meet famous people, celebrities. And it took me away from some of the gloomier stories I was doing as an investigative reporter in television. So I was sent to the Washington Convention Center to get an interview with JFK Jr. and watch him promote his magazine. I walked into a room of probably 2,000 women, advertising people, promotional people, people who were going to give publicity for his new magazine.
They're all drooling.
They're all drooling, of course. And so the media was sent to the back of the room because JFK Jr. didn't want the cameras close. Now, this made no sense to me. I walked in and I see there's about a football field distance between where he is on the stage and the 40 or 50 press people. So I said, well, this will never do. So I went to the back of the room, got the attention of all my colleagues, and I said, I'm going to go up and insist that we come closer, but you have to be willing to walk out with me if they say no. So they all said, okay, go for it.
They all went for it.
See him. They all went for it. They all went for it. So I went and I got the attention of his assistant. I'm waving to her, and this girl walks over to me with a snarky attitude. What do you want? I said, well, what I want is to have access to a JFK Jr., to your employer, who wants us to publicize his magazine, but we can't possibly do it from 2,000 feet away. So she said, too bad. So I said, listen, lady, your job is to talk to your boss and tell him we're all going to leave. So how's that going to accomplish what he wants? So anyway, she goes over, talks to him. JFK Jr. looks over at me and signals, okay, bring the press corps up. I said, oh, one more thing I want. I want an exclusive interview with him. And she laughed. She said, nobody gets that. I said, well, this is the deal. I want a one-on-one with him only for about 5 minutes. So she asks him and he agrees to do it. So after the presentation, I'm standing there with an Entertainment Tonight microphone, with the famous E.T.
Right.
on the microphone. And I know that all the producers in Los Angeles want is to see that E.T. mic flag under this breathtakingly handsome face. He was more good looking in person than he was in his photographs, which is hard to imagine. But I stood there looking up at him. He was quite tall, actually. And he said, go ahead, ask me anything you want. I said, Mr. Kennedy, we just need to see your face over this mic flag. I literally said that. And I was the only producer of all the producers around the country who got the one-on-one with him. So E.T. loved me forever. But he said, you can ask me one personal question, because he just got back from his honeymoon. And I said, Mr. Kennedy, I have no interest in your personal life. I just need your face on videotape. And he subsequently wrote me a note later.
What?
Thanking me. Yeah, he wrote me a note. Thank you. That was the best short interview I ever had.
Oh,
so,
my God.
JFK Jr. Oh. So you take it away. Who was your, we'll talk about Paul McCartney in a minute. What was yours?
Yeah. I think the most famous person I've ever met was Sammy Davis Jr.
Are you kidding me?
For a lot of young people, they're going, who is that?
But, oh, they know who he is. Yes. Yeah.
So this was back in Pittsburgh when I worked at a news station there as a reporter. And I'd gotten some free tickets to go see Sammy Davis at Heinz Hall. And I said, you know, Sammy Davis, he's, why would I want to go see him? I mean, it's like, he's old. He's like
with the old. He's probably, yeah.
Yeah.
Be careful what you say.
Right. Yeah. Well, yeah. I was a young buck then. Well, not a buck. I was a young doe. But I digress. But anyway,
yes.
So here I am. And I got these tickets and I decide, oh, I'll go because I couldn't give them away to anybody else. So I go with my husband at the time. And we are kind of making fun of the going to the show or going down the street arm and arm going, oh, Candyman. You know, just kind of being, this is going to be weird. We get there and Sammy is, I mean, I've seen lots of performers, been tons of concerts, comedians, actors, and Sammy was the most consummate entertainer I have ever seen and will ever see. And it's hard to describe the magic of this man. I mean, he was a performer in Harlem at age 3 is when he started. And he could sing and he can dance and he can tell stories. And he was so authentic and so real. And he took his shoes off at one point and sat on the edge of the stage and just started talking about his childhood. I mean, it was amazing. And he's a great singer. And Candyman was awesome. So the next day I managed to find out who his manager was. I said to him, I said, look, if Sammy ever comes back to town, I have to interview this guy. He goes, okay. So, you know, who remembers that, right, Julie? I mean, you say that to people and they never get back to you. They don't keep a card or whatever. Well, a year goes past and he's coming back to perform again. And his manager calls me up and said, I'm going to set up an interview with Sammy because you really wanted to do it. I said, are you kidding me? So long story short, I interview Sammy. I do a 2-part series on him. I start by talking about, you know, what his performance history was with his 2 uncles and oh, and just on and on. And I have all this wonderful old archival footage. And I go to the show that night and I get to go backstage and it's just really cool. Okay. So it's the next day I'm working and I get a call from the manager and he says, hey, Penny, he said, Sammy saw your stories last night, really liked the stories. I said, oh, thank you. I said, well, it was really great again to meet him. And thank you again for helping to arrange that. And he said, oh, just a minute. Here's Sammy. He wants to talk to you. So he hands the phone over and Sammy's on the line and he goes, Penny, what are you doing tonight? What are you and your husband doing tonight? And I said, I don't know. He goes, would you like to come and have dinner with me? And I said, well, it's either that or reruns of The Love Boat tonight. So I guess we'll come see you. And he laughed. So we get instructions to go to this fancy hotel and we have to be led up into the penthouse suite with a special guard and has a locked key to the upper floors. And we go in, he's in this gorgeous presidential suite. And I'm thinking, you know, he knew a lot of people in Pittsburgh. He knew people everywhere. And I'm thinking that it's going to be a big dinner party, you know, catered or whatever. You walk in. And we're the only ones there.
Are you kidding me? He was cooking for just you and your husband. He knew how to, yeah. He knew how to cook. Oh my God.
He knew how to cook and he loved cooking. He says, you know, I just invited you guys. And we're like, what? And Sammy had set up in his hotel room, all these beautiful, shiny pots and pans, like a long banquet table full of pots and pans and dishes and this and that. And he said, I travel with all my cooking gear because I like to cook. And he says, I'm cooking dinner for you tonight. So we had like chicken, we had collard greens, and we had all kinds of great food. And it was just the 3 of us. And we sat and talked until 4 o'clock in the morning. And he told incredible stories, of course, of his life and times in the entertainment industry. And at one point the phone rang. I got to take this call. He says, Frank is the only one that calls me on this line.
Oh, no.
So he gets up. Oh. Yeah, it was about midnight. Yeah, and it was Frank Sinatra.
Frank.
And he talks to Frank. And then he comes back. And he says, I apologize, but he says, I always pick up Frank's calls. So we were drinking and talking. That's back when Sammy still smoked. And we sat and talked and talked and talked till about 4 in the morning. And I think we could have kept going on, but I just felt so badly because, you know, we were keeping him up. But he was so interested in us.
Yeah.
He wanted to know about our lives, normal people, you know, who don't live in the limelight. And he was probably more interested in our stories than we might have been in his. But what a night, what an amazing thing. And he stayed in touch with me all through the years. And when they came back on the Rat Pack tour, Sinatra, Dean Martin, and Sammy to Seattle, I believe it was in 1983 or 84, 86, something like that, got backstage passes and sat there and saw Dean and Frank. And I mean, and then a few months later he died. So, wow.
You had your moment, girl.
It was really unique.
You had your moment. I always found with sometimes the most famous people were often the nicest. It was sometimes the mid-level fame people or people who were on their way down from stardust who were the most difficult.
True. You've got to have some stories about, you know, weird encounters, right?
Well, all my encounters have been weird, but the next famous topped with JFK Jr. is Paul McCartney.
Oh.
I mean, there are a few people who are world renowned. I mean, literally everyone knows who he is. And this was at a concert in 1990. And by the way, at the age of 16, I was at the first Beatles concert in Washington, D.C.
Unbelievable.
Yes. Oh. Unbelievable.
You're going to marry Paul, right? You're going to marry him.
If he saw me in the audience, I was sure when I was 16 that he would want to marry me.
I was about a few years younger, but I thought he'd want to marry me. I was probably about 10.
Yeah,
but
he was, of course. It didn't turn out that way. But nonetheless, I stayed in love with him and to this day. So in 1990, he was coming to Seattle to perform with Wings. And I was sent to the King Dome, which has now been demolished, for a press conference with him. And I believe, girlfriend, you were there.
I was there. I had front row seat.
And so did I. Yes.
And there, I saved a seat for you. You came in. I said, Julie, up here.
Yeah. So I sat next to you. We're in the first row.
Can I jump in here? For anybody who knows Julie Blacklow, she is not intimidated by anybody or anything. She will say what she feels. She is confident, powerful, etc.
Well,
here comes Julie in, and she's like a 15-year-old schoolgirl. She sits down and she's wiggling around and she goes, "Oh my gosh, I don't know what I'm going to do." I go, "What's wrong with you?" And she goes, "I'm about to see Paul McCartney." I go, Yeah, he's cool. He's famous. And then she's like, "No, but you don't understand." And she's just like a basket case. And
I was.
I'm going, "Girl, what is up?"
I was 16 again in that moment. And when he walked out and sat at we were 15 feet away from him?
Yeah, right in the front row.
Right in the front row. And he sat down at the desk and I started crying. I have done thousands of stories in my career, which would, you know, make anyone cry, some for, you know, sad reasons, whatever. But I had never fallen apart like this. And he looked over at me and he said, "Are you all right?" So I said, "No, just give me a minute. Okay, just give me a minute." And the press corps behind me, there must have been 100 people there.
Yeah.
Were laughing at me with good reason because it was ridiculous. And he's looking at me and I'm looking at him and I just had a moment. And so
I think all girls who love the Beatles like you did and I did can relate.
I relate to that moment. Here he was. He was an icon. He was handsome, successful. He was a Beatle.
It was a
Beatle. For God's sake. Yes. So after the press conference was over, his road manager had heard that I was at the first Beatles concert in 1964, February 11th, 1964, a date I will never forget.
Exactly.
And the road manager invited me to go backstage to meet with him personally.
Oh, my gosh.
With his wife, Linda McCartney. And that, I'm getting chills even talking about it. It was an astonishing moment. And he said, "So I hear you were there." And I said, "Yes." And he said that he told me that was one of the few concerts they ever remembered because it was their first American appearance. And after that, he said it was just such a blur.
Yeah.
You know, it was just crazy. It became an incredible, chaotic life for them. But that moment for him in Washington, D.C., at the D.C. Coliseum, and for me, we were bound in a moment that we shared in that 1964 concert and it just to meet him. And the sad part of the story, I got his autograph and I lost it.
Oh, girl.
Oh, well, the memory will never be lost.
That's
so,
right.
Famous people
in your heart.
I have a couple more, but you want to take a turn?
Well, you know, I'm thinking about interviews that didn't go so well or
there was so many. You have a few of those.
Oh, my goodness. Because, like you said, it's kind of the middle range stars that sometimes are the nastiest and their people are nasty.
Mm-hmm.
And you're kind of like, you know, I'm here to kind of help you publicize your whatever, a movie or
we're here to help you.
Magazine. We're here to kind of help, and they treat you like adversaries.
Well, Entertainment Tonight was, you know, free advertising for anybody. And that's where I met a lot of the famous people.
And still they can be nasty. Yeah. So you had a bad encounter.
I had a very bad encounter with a very famous Jennifer Lopez, who was in Seattle to shoot the movie Enough. So Entertainment Tonight sent me over to, I don't even remember the place, but I do remember the feeling. And so my crew and I, two cameras, lights, audio people set up, and they made us wait 4 hours.
4 hours.
For her to show up. So she finally saunters over with her entourage behind her and plops herself down in the chair and won't even make eye contact and clearly doesn't want to be there. Mm-hmm. Now, I get that movie making is like watching paint dry. I mean, we've been, you and I have both been on movie sets, so we know it's not, you know,
exciting.
It's not exciting. It's boring. And it can be very rigorous on the stars. I get that. But here she is to publicize her movies. And she sits down and stares at me.
With hostility.
I said to her, it doesn't look like you're really up for doing this. And she just sort of glares at me. So in that moment, I turned to my crew and I said, pack it up. We're leaving. And she was just stunned. And her entourage.
She didn't ask any questions.
She was so rude. Her manager said, well, you can't do that. And he picks up the phone and calls Los Angeles Entertainment Tonight.
You said, just watch me.
Of course, the people in Los Angeles, because I had gotten them the exclusive JFK Jr. interview.
With their darling.
I can do no wrong. And the executive producer of Entertainment Tonight said, well, if Julie says they got to leave, they got to leave. And so that was the last I ever heard of her.
Yeah.
And every time I see that movie come up, it reminds me of that moment. You know, yeah. I get that, you know, famous people have bad days like the rest of us.
They do. Some more than others.
Yes.
Some more than, I've heard of a good friend who worked with Jennifer Lopez and actually says a lot of the same thing.
I can't tell my Gene Simmons story on the air.
Oh.
And I can't tell my encounter with Keith Richards.
Oh.
Or Billy Preston. No, can't do that. So
really?
You have no.
Come on, Julie, you're teasing us.
Well, no, I'm gonna save the Chuck Berry one.
Oh, that's okay. Chuck Berry, we'll wrap up with him.
Yeah.
Okay. So do you know who Tommy Lee Jones is, right?
Oh gosh, yes.
He's a great actor. And Tommy Lee Jones was famous. So we did these things called junkets. And the junkets were hosted by the studios. So like Paramount or Warner Brothers or whatever, when they had a big movie coming out, they would invite the media to come to LA or New York, wherever the stars were going to be situated. And they gave you 5 minutes, like literally 5 minutes interview with all the different stars of the show, plus sometimes the producers or directors or whatever. It's just like this cattle call of, you know, people right. going in and out, in and out, in and out of these rooms where the rooms are all lit. The stars just sitting there bored as hell, you know, and they have a floor director who counts you down. So, you know, wrapping you up when your 5 minutes are up. So
and the stars are waiting for a new question.
Right,
they don't want to hear the same.
Which are really hard to answer the later you get in the day for them. If you're early on, then you can maybe like, you know, so why did you choose this role? Maybe it'd be the first time they heard it that day. But by the time it's 4 o'clock in the afternoon, they're like, done. They're done with you.
Oh. I used to open those and say, tell me about your sex life, just for something completely different.
Right, right.
Yeah.
So anyway. Tommy Lee Jones, I heard, was notoriously difficult. And this was a movie called Blown Away with Jeff Bridges.
Okay.
So this other guy, this other old reporter who'd been in the business of reporting entertainment news for years in Boston said, look, he goes, Tommy Lee Jones, you will never get a good interview out of him. I said, no, just wait. I'm sure I can. He goes, no. He goes, watch. He goes, every time I've interviewed Tommy Lee Jones, he just gives me one word answers. And he said, so this time when I go in, just watch what I do. And so I said, okay. So I could watch because they had a control room where directors are watching all these rooms, right? And you got the little monitors going. So I go in to watch him when he goes in to do his interview and he sits down there and he plops into his chair and the floor director goes, okay, we're rolling, speed, go. So then you would start in with your first question. But no, the reporter from Boston, whose name escapes me now, he just stares at Tommy Lee Jones.
Doesn't say anything?
Doesn't say anything. And Tommy Lee Jones stares back at him. And 1 minute goes by and 2 minutes goes by and 5 minutes goes by. The whole thing is over. And the floor director says, okay, we're out of time. And the guy just gets up. And all I did was sit there and stare at each other. He didn't ask him like one question, right? Because he knew Tommy Lee wouldn't say anything anyway. So he was like, just totally like messing with him, right? So it's my turn to go in. And I'm thinking, oh, I'm so charming. I know I'll get Tommy Lee to talk to me. You know, I'll play some I have a little tricks I can use, la, la, la. So I go in, I get the same treatment basically from Tommy Lee. It's like, what is the most challenging part of the role or whatever? I don't know. I was trying to think of it as something that wasn't a yes, no question. It was hard. I didn't like it or whatever. I was hungry. Or, you know, he didn't even give me that many words in an answer. It was like the yes, no, da, da, da. He didn't seem mean about it. He just didn't know how to like form a sentence, I guess. And so this is the weirdest thing. When it was over and the floor director said, okay, time's up. And I have absolutely zero. He leans over sincerely, kind of taps my knee and looks at me, leans in. He goes, I hope you got what you needed.
Well, depends on how you look at it. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thanks, Tommy.
He's a strange dude.
Yeah.
Strange dude.
Really strange.
But truly my favorite celebrity encounter has to be with Chuck Berry.
Oh, do tell.
And I will tell. I will tell. He was performing in a rock and roll reunion concert at the Tacoma Dome. Mm-hmm. And I took five camera people from the NBC affiliate in Seattle, King TV. We were going to shoot a little documentary. There were, you know, Dion and the Belmonts, the Shirelles, all some of the old 60s stars, mm-hmm. were Jerry Lee Lewis. I mean, an amazing lineup of people. The star was Chuck Berry. He was the headliner. So we bring in our cameras to the back entrance of the Tacoma Dome, cables everywhere. Anyone, you know what it takes to produce a television documentary, let alone a news story. So Chuck Berry walks into the back room dressed in a red velvet suit and
this is backstage?
White backstage, mm-hmm. white patent leather shoes.
Yeah.
He looks at us and starts to have a meltdown and says, who the are you? Mm-hmm. And if I see any of those cameras when I go on stage, I'm going to leave the stage. Huh. So no one had told him ahead of time we were going to be there and that we wanted to interview him. Well, he wasn't having any of that. So the crew is looking at me and what do we do now? But I start to flirt with him and fawn over him, which was not that hard to do because he was one of my, you know, rock and roll heroes.
Yeah. Pull out the fawning.
Pull out the fawning. Fawning works. Flirt. I was younger. I was pretty. I was, you know, a flirt. So I start to fawn over him and tell him how much I loved his music. And suddenly I see the crack of a smile on his face.
You've gotten to
I've
him.
Gotten through. Yeah. I got through. And so he starts to flirt back with me.
Oh.
And before too much time passes, he walks over to me, puts his hand in his pocket.
Uh-oh.
And starts pulling out.
What?
Nope. Not what you think. Well, he wanted to, but pulls out a wad of, I recall, at least $100 bills. Was there such a thing as a $1,000 bill? I don't know. But there was a wad of cash. Chuck Berry, I would learn later, always got paid in cash before he performed anywhere.
Wow.
So
he had this big wad of bills in his pocket.
Big wad of bills. He pulls them out. He starts peeling off 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. And I'm looking at this money and he hands a pile of $100 bills to me and says, and I'm quoting, "Hey, mama, these are yours if you'll just give me a little head before I go on stage."
Are you kidding me?
And I thought, wow, you know. And the crew, all my all male camera crew is looking at me and I'm witnessing this whole episode. And so I actually thought about it for a moment. I thought,
You actually thought about it?
I did. I thought it's Chuck Berry. I mean, you know, this is an opportunity.
And he did have those white patent leather shoes on.
He had the white patent leather shoes and the money. This would be tax free. You know, I thought I could make a little money on the side.
Tax free.
And so I thought, well, you know, I thought about it for about 30 seconds. And I thought 30 seconds. I'm looking at my camera crew. I'm thinking, what do you think, guys?
How long do you think this will take?
Well, good question. I thought, well, this is the kind of thing that comes back to bite you in the ass. If I ever ran for president, so you know, it might get in the way. And I had never in my whole career before that or subsequent to that event ever even let anyone buy me a cup of coffee. I had ethics. I thought this will not look good if I do this.
Roll on and this, so guys. Roll on this.
I declined his generous offer. Yes. And he said in leaving, he was still a little pissed off that I didn't accept his offer.
So you just said, how'd you turn him down though? How'd you turn him down?
I said, thank you, Mr. Barry. No, I did. I remember, but I said, Mr. Barry, I called him Mr. Barry.
Mr. Barry.
I said, thank you for your generous offer, but I have to decline because I, as a reporter, I'm not allowed to take money for anything.
For any kind of gift.
And so free gifts. So we left and he said, if I see those cameras out there, you know, I'm going to leave. So we snuck the cameras, sneaked or snuck, whatever, into the way far back so he couldn't see them. And he performed.
Yeah.
And I did not perform.
You did not perform. But, you didn't rock around the clock?
I didn't rock around the, how can you even go there? So anyway, I declined. But it is one of the best Chuck Berry stories ever. And whenever I see him on a rock and roll show or, you know, old footage of him, I finally remember the time I had the opportunity and declined to give Chuck Berry a blowjob.
I can't top that. I can't top that one. I'm sorry.
It's hard to. Can't believe I'm getting, my mind's going in the gutter. Anyway, famous people.
Yeah. Famous people and the things they do and the things they, and the way they treat you, and some are great and some are awful. And we could write an entire book just on celebrities and the things.
That's such a thought, Penny, but most of them have been lovely and generous and kind. And as I said before, the more famous they were, the more secure they were, and the nicer they were.
Like a Paul McCartney.
And I have to put Chuck Berry in that category too, because
he was pretty secure.
He was
confident.
And he gave me the offer of a lifetime.
He certainly did.
I know.
Well, darling, we should probably at some point revisit this because we have a lot more stories to talk about with celebrities.
We do. And we're going to have some famous people we're going to be interviewing in our podcast too.
Love you, Julie.
I love you, Penny.
And don't forget, we are a couple of dusty muffins. Tell your friends, tell your enemies, tell your children, tell your professors, tell your coworkers, tell your girlfriends. We want you to join us. And we hope today that you've been educated, uplifted, and entertained.
And what was the other one? Engaged.
Oh, yes. I always forget that one. Engaged. And don't think about Chuck Berry when you think about engaged. We're out of here. We're a couple of dusty muffins. And before we go, you know the reason we sound so very smart and succinct is because of our production director, Clem Daniels, who glues it all together.